On this 12th day of October 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in chapter 4, entitled Transcendental Knowledge, text number 38. Nahi jnane na sadrisham.
Nahi jnane sadrisham.
Pavitram iha vidyate.
Pavitram iha vidyate.
Tat svayam yoga sangsiddha. Kale natmani vindati. Translation. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. Text 39. Shadhavalabhate jnanam. Tatpara sangyatendriyaha. Jnanam ladva padham shantim. Achade nadi gacchati. Translation. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. Purport. Such knowledge in Krishna consciousness can be achieved by a faithful person who believes firmly in Krishna. One is called a faithful man who thinks that simply by acting in Krishna consciousness he can attain the highest perfection. This faith is attained by the discharge of devotional service and by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, which cleanses one's heart of all material dirt. Over and above this, one should control the senses. A person who is faithful to Krishna and who controls the senses can easily attain perfection in the knowledge of Krishna consciousness without delay. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshurun Midatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So in the outside world, there's a common saying, seeing is believing. But actually in our world, believing is seeing. You can't get that vision, which means the vision of the learned person. Your knowledge will change the way you see the world. Until you have faith. You have to have at least some preliminary faith in order to come into the association of devotees. And in that association of devotees, your faith will increase to the point where you're ready to practice. And from that practice, impurities in the heart are cleansed away, and then your faith increases and your vision increases also. Your ability to see through the eyes of the Shastra. It is said that there's a word called Shastra Chakshu, having the eyes of the Shastra. It's like in the morning we're reading these chapters on Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya means a process of analysis. So that we see, for instance, that, oh, this world is made up of these 24 different elements. It's made up of inanimate energies of the Supreme. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, false ego. That's eight. It's also made up of the senses by which we perceive these elements. That's another five. They're called the knowledge-acquiring senses or the jnanendriya. We have the ears. We have the sense of taste, sense of smell, sense of touch, sense of sight. Five. And they have their corresponding objects, right? We have form, we have touch, we have things that smell, we have the taste, and of course we have sound. And so that's another five. So that's five, five, and eight. That's 18 already. Then we have the five active senses. This is another element of Sankhya. The most important sense, really, for a devotee is the voice. But second, perhaps, is the hands. These are the active senses. The voice and the hands, you do everything. But you also need to move, so you have the feet, right? And then there are also the procreative and excretive organs, and that makes another five. So now we're up to 23 already. Now that 24th element is sometimes said to be contaminated consciousness. The 25th element can be the soul, not a material element, of course, and the 26th, the supersoul. So knowing these 26, knowing that this world is made up of those, that changes the way you see. And we're discussing the three modes of nature in the present chapter in the morning. Previous chapter was about Sankhya. Then we said, oh, how are these different things interacting? Very complex, according to these different modes. You see? So armed with that kind of knowledge, you walk out the door, you see the world and you see yourself differently. You see, oh, everybody's spirit. Everyone is spirit. They just have a different configuration of the machine. Krishna calls it a machine, the human body, made of the material energy. And it's acting according to these different modes of nature. Now, with that knowledge, and also the knowledge that ultimately every soul is a servant of Krishna, then you're going to act differently if you're fixed in that knowledge. But the, Hare Krishna. Yeah, darshan at 8:15.
Oh.
8:15 darshan.
Be quiet, here say 8:30. So.
8:15 is the next opening. It's only 7:30 now. 7:30. So you see, but it begins with faith. In other words, just to open the book, just to hear this knowledge, just to try to apply it to your life, it requires some preliminary faith. And that's why it says, Shraddha Valabhate Jnanam. You get this kind of knowledge based on your faith. If you're not faithful, that'll be in the next verse, you can't achieve the benefits of this knowledge. Now, what are the benefits? We just heard that it acts like a boat to carry one across the ocean of birth and death. And this knowledge, transcendental knowledge, acts like a fire to burn your sinful reactions so that you can be liberated and attain to the supreme goal of life. So it's a great benefit, but faith is important. Tatparak sangyate, but there are also other qualifications that help the knowledge to manifest. Tatpara means one has to be dedicated to it. In other words, there is a process by which you cultivate the knowledge, by hearing and by applying it. By hearing, as I like to point out, if you go to chapter 13, text 8, you'll find a whole list, right? It's not just a coincidence of knowing some verses or knowing even the whole Bhagavad Gita by heart. The quality has to be there. The first quality is humility. Amanitvam adambitvam. Yeah, amanitvam means humility. After all, you remember the way in which you approach the guru, text 34, by surrender, service, and inquiry. You can only do that in a humble state of mind, right? And adambitvam means honesty, lack of hypocrisy, of deviousness. Ahimsa, non-violence. Shantir, amanitvam adambitvam ahimsak shantir arjivam. Kshanti means forgiveness and simplicity, cleanliness, approaching the spiritual master. These are all elements of knowledge. Who would have thought? You know, you go to a university, you can be the worst dog in your, you know, in your off campus, but if you know your stuff, you get a degree, you get a chair, right? It's famous, you know. The guys are, I remember, personal experience, in the 1984 or so, there was a book called The Philosophy Book. It was never printed as such. The result of all of that, thing that came out of it was the Beyond Illusion and Doubt. Did you ever see that book? It's a series of conversations Prabhupada had on different philosophers. You don't know it, it's out of print. But at a certain point in Miami, there was the idea Vridyananda Maharaj was going to have these conversations with leading members of different departments of philosophy. We'd fly him in, and they would, you know, speak with him, and it would be recorded, transcribed. I would edit it, and like that. So I was designated as the official lunch taker, with these guys because he didn't want to be with them morning and afternoon and also take lunch. He wanted a respite from their association. So I was the guy who had got to take lunch. So here was this guy. They flew him in from who knows where. I forget his department. We never got very far, so it was probably pre-Platonist or Neoplatonist or something. We're back in the Greek. Oh, he was the leading guy in the country or something, one of the leading guys. So we found that out and, you know, offered to fly him in. So the guy was drinking. He was drinking. You know, he had a little flask or something. We'd eat a little prasadam and he would drink a little of that. This was his character, you know. And it's legion in these, you know, these academics. So what happened to the character part of the knowledge? They don't have that, you see. So it's not real knowledge. So sangyatendriya. This is another part, controlling the senses in order to achieve this knowledge. Now, having achieved that knowledge, one can get the supreme peace, peacefulness. If you recall from the second chapter, what is that peace? The peace is attained when one doesn't want anything from this world. It's completely self-satisfied. This is real peace. It's described... Raga dvesha vimuktais tu vishayan indriyais charanatma vashe vidhayam prasadam adigacchati. The same idea. If one is free of raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion, even amongst the objects of the senses, atma vashe vidhayam, self-control, by practicing the regulative principles of freedom, then one gets the prasadam of the Lord, the grace of the Lord. And by that grace of the Lord, Pasade savadukanam hanaroso pajayate vasanda chetaso yeshu buddhiya paya vatishtati. And when you get that prasad of the Lord, the grace, then all your material miseries are gone. Vasanda chetaso, one becomes very naturally joyful and your intelligence becomes fixed. Now without that fixity of intelligence, he says, Nasti buddhira yuktasya nacha yukta bhavana nacha bhavitak shantir ashanta sikutak sukham. By that fixed intelligence means transcendental to the modes of nature, free from the attractions of this world, you know, and linked into the reservoir of pleasure, which is Krishna consciousness in the heart. So he says, without being linked in devotional service, nasti yukta, yukta, this means in yoga, there's no fixed intelligence. And there's no ecstasy, no bhavana in it without this thing. And without this ability to be free from material attachments and fixed in the pleasure of the self, there's no peace. And without peace, there's no happiness. So who can really be peaceful in this world? Here he says peace. Jnanam ludva param shantim. Param shantim is the supreme peace. In the Bible, they call it the peace beyond all understanding or something like that. It's not available to anyone else in this world. There's basically four kinds of people in this world. Sunday night, if you saw Mahat's lecture. There's the karmis, the gyanis, the yogis, and the bhaktas. Now, within the karmis, there are some who are following, a few, who are following the rules and regulations of the Vedas and trying to enjoy, in this world, peacefully. I mean, not peacefully, but in a regulated way, so that they're not incurring sinful reactions. Those are very few. Mostly in this age, in this time, vikarmis, people performing all kinds of abominable activities. But they're still karmis. Means they're selfish actors on the basis of the senses and the mind. Then you have a few gyanis who are speculators. They analyze, like we're doing with the Sankhya, but they don't understand the goal of that knowledge. They think that the ultimate goal is merging into the absolute, impersonalist. Then you have yogis who meditate, do some strict austerities, but again, their goal is not bhakti. The goal is some siddhis, some perfections. You know, imagine being able to control others' minds, being able to get anything you want from anywhere, even to the point of creating a planet. You know, I mean, there's higher beings who do that. They're all yogis, siddhis, siddhas. Or they want to... go to some higher realm. There's so many realms. Maharloka, Tapaloka, Siddhaloka. These are planets far, far better than ours for, you know, sense enjoyment. But there's nothing spiritual about it inherently. It's just a mystical or a esoteric kind of manipulation of material energy. So you've got the karmis, the gyanis, the yogis, and the bhaktas, they don't have any selfish desire. The pure devotees, who you aspire for. Their only desire is to serve Krishna. So who's peaceful, according to Lord Chaitanya? Only the bhaktas, because they don't want anything. He says, mukti siddhi kami. Mukti means material enjoyment. Mukti means liberation. Siddhi means yogic perfection. Kami means one who is very passionate about it, obsessed with it. That's his goal in life. So you see that the three other categories, they want something. And the sakali ashanta. They're all unpeaceful. How can you be peaceful? Even if you have everything that money can buy, you know, there's still so many things that you don't have. You may not have a loving wife, loving kids. After some time, you don't have your health, no matter how much money you spend. Steve Jobs had $8.5 billion, it still didn't save him. Hey, pancreatic cancer. So was he completely peaceful? No, how can he be peaceful? You know? But the devotee, in any stage, if you're really fixed in devotion, you have that inner peace because you're with Krishna. And that's what's being mentioned here, that gyan. In one sense, gyan is a state of consciousness. It's Krishna consciousness. You see? You know, in the second chapter, there's this famous verse, what is that absolute truth? Vadanti tattavidas tattvam ya gyanam advayam. Brahmeti padamatmeti bhagavanti shabite. So this first line says, Vadanti tat tattva vidas. So the tattva vidas means those who know the tattva, the truth. They declare, this is Sutta Goswami speaking, that this, now, and then the second line is very interesting. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam. He's saying that the tattva, the ultimate truth, we call about the absolute truth, right? That's Krishna. Is non-dual knowledge. Now, how does that compute? How does that fit into our conception of what knowledge means? Well, in one sense, knowledge is consciousness, in one sense, right? You're conscious of something. There's a content to it, and you know it. That's one. So in this particular case, knowledge means the consciousness beyond the dualities of this world. And it appears in three phases: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The supreme consciousness, which is in individual consciousness, is the supreme personality of Godhead. Consciousness means personality. And so he said it is manifested or revealed in three levels according to the means of approach. The jnanis, the impersonalists, the pasvis, they may know it as the one undifferentiated light called Brahman. The yogis who are meditating properly, they may that absolute truth may reveal as the localized Paramatma, the super soul in the heart, everyone's heart and in the atom. And for the bhaktas, that absolute truth reveals its full being is Bhagavan, the supreme personality of Godhead, full in six opulences, which includes the Paramatma and the Brahmajyoti. See? So, but it's described there as jnana. Jnana madhvayam, non-dual knowledge. So in one sense, jnana can mean the supreme revelation of Krishna. Having attained that, one attains supreme peace, and you attain it quickly. It doesn't have to be after many lifetimes. Depending on the intensity of our faith, which will be manifest in the sincerity of our practice. So shuddhaval labhate jnanam. The faithful, those who are shuddhavan, means possessing faith, will attain that knowledge if one is dedicated to it and controls the senses. See, the senses are outlets through which one's consciousness flows, and transcendental knowledge is just the opposite, in the sense that you're not trying to gratify the senses, but you're using the senses in such a way that it brings you closer to Krishna. And Krishna himself is also revealing in the heart, if he's pleased with our activities. So this is the good side, but in the next verse he'll describe what happens if you don't have that faith. Faith is a very important aspect, and it's acquired only by associating with the faithful. That's why the association of real devotees is so important. You know, only in that way can you get faith that you will also begin the practice. Otherwise, you remain doubtful constantly. Okay, any questions on text 39? Next verse deals with the doubt. Agyas chasha dadhanascha. Sanshayatma vinashyati. Nayam lokos dinaparo. Nasukam sanshayatmanaha. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Purport. Out of many standard and authoritative revealed scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita is the best. Persons who are almost like animals have no faith in or knowledge of the standard revealed scriptures. And some, even though they have knowledge of or can cite passages from the revealed scriptures, have actually no faith in these words. And even though others may have faith in scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita, they do not believe in or worship the personality of God, Sri Krishna. Such persons cannot have any standing in Krishna consciousness. They fall down. Out of all the above-mentioned persons, those who have no faith and are always doubtful make no progress at all. Men without faith in God and His revealed word find no good in this world nor in the next. For them, there is no happiness whatsoever. One should therefore follow the principles of revealed scriptures with faith and thereby be raised to the platform of knowledge. Only this knowledge will help one become promoted to the transcendental platform of spiritual understanding. In other words, doubtful persons have no status whatsoever in spiritual emancipation. One should therefore follow in the footsteps of great acharyas who are in the disciplic succession and thereby attain success. So, this is the other side, the doubt. Doubts have to be slain. In the two verses hence, he says to Arjuna, slay those doubts with the weapon of knowledge. So, how is this faith developed, as I mentioned, by associating with the faithful and also hearing of previous generations of devotees? This is why our books are filled with stories of great devotees. Not only in the hoary past, 5,000 years ago or 5 million years ago, but also in the recent past, 500, 400, 300 years ago, and even contemporary, Srila Prabhupada. And these accounts of their exploits or of their activities and their teachings can impart faith into us if we're receptive to it. Because on one side you have doubt, on the other side you have faith, right? And both of them will determine how you act. If you're filled with doubt, there's no way that you can chant Hare Krishna. You can't believe anything like that. It's just a story to you. You're on the outside of the whole thing. whereas if you have some faith, then you can be enthused or enthusiastic about practicing. And as soon as the practice comes, your faith will increase because you'll get experience. Then it's not just faith in something unperceived, but you're getting some perception anyway, which is increasing your faith. So here, what is the basis of the doubt? The only basis of doubt in these words here, is the experience that we have or the things that we read that are on the material plane. In other words, we can say, I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen God. I've never seen spirit. I've never seen the effects of spirit. It's all simply a story. And there are so many other accounts of other gods and other spirits and everything. So it's all relative. People just make these things up. And so you're relying on your reasoning ability, material reason, and on your material senses. And of course, there are books, there are teachers, there are parents, there is a whole culture that will further your doubt in these things. This whole argument, just to take one example, of the evolution versus intelligent design. This is true to Karma and the rest of the BI. BI's Bhaktivedanta Institute has been fighting this battle, since 1977. Prabhupada's injunction. He himself fought that battle. And but they've erected a great edifice. Many teachers, books, shows, magazines, whatever you can imagine, a propaganda is there to convince people that we evolved from below, from the monkeys, and that ultimately life on Earth and in the whole universe began by chance combination of chemicals. It's directly stated in chapter 16 that this is a mnemonic view. Here it says, asatyam apatishtam te jagadahu anishwaram aparaspadasam bhutam kimanyat kama hoitukam. Hoitukam means cause. So they say there's no ultimate truth. There's no ultimate reality. There's no ultimate basis for this world. It's simply atoms in the void moving around, and just by chance they've come together now, and now we're sitting here. They declare that there is no Ishvara, there's no God. And everything is caused just by aparaspada sambhutam, simply by the attraction and repulsion of different particles and atoms and molecules. And that's the ultimate cause. There's no person back behind it. And this is the basic demoniac view that's supported in this age by so many books and so many ideas, so many textbooks, everything like that. So if you believe that, then you can't believe when Krishna says, I am the cause of everything. You know? You can't. You can't believe both things at once. Either the ultimate cause is chance, you know, or the ultimate cause is the Supreme Person. So who believes what? You know, on the side of there being a Supreme Personality of Godhead and all of this philosophy that's coming out here, you know, from this, are these towering intellects. Just see who, you know, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a whole line going back, Madhavendra Puri, Advaita Acharya, Lord Chaitanya. These are all historical figures. There's no question that they lived. And they taught, they believed, they taught, they wrote, they lived this philosophy. And they told of their revelations. You know? So in order to maintain your doubt, and that's what we're talking about here, doubt. Krishna, this verse is all about doubt and how it destroys you. You have to throw that, all of that out the window. Oh, they were just imagining. Oh, they were just telling tales. You know? Are we ready to do that? This is what Srila Prabhupada gave to us. This is the most important thing he gave. His certainty, as certain as you can describe this wall here. I saw this. This is what it's like. Here's my. That's how certain he was of Krishna's existence, having experienced himself, Krishna's existence, you know, seen with transcendental eye. And his presence, his words, his very demeanor, everything about him. You know, and his knowledge of the Shastra and the way that everything holds together and makes perfect sense on, you know, that one level. All of that infused faith in his listeners. And so they were ready to chant Hare Krishna. And as soon as you begin chanting, Krishna from within starts to confirm everything. If you don't come to the point of chanting, it's like licking the outside of the bottle. I'm telling you, that's been my experience. You have to come to the point of chanting to that a little bit even. It's a few rounds a day, a little kirtan here and there, you know. So that from within, Krishna starts to build your faith and give you realization. So, but here Krishna says, those who refuse to do that, and there are many, many, millions and millions, the ignorant and faithless who doubt the revealed scriptures, do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. So this is why you find people, they want to believe in something. Because just to believe in nothing is a void. So, but they can't believe in God, you know, because we know that's the superstition. So they'll believe in what? Health food. They'll believe in, the San Diego Chargers. Something that they're ready to put their energy into and rah-rah, you know, and get something out of. You get something out of it, you know. There's an excitement there, especially if your team wins, you know. But something that we can draw us out, that we can believe in something more powerful than ourselves, and we can adulate and feel it, you know, some reciprocation. But until that something that you believe in is actually the God who's worthy of belief and faith and service, you're going to be cheated in this world. You're going to be cheated. You cannot place your faith in the body, cannot place your faith in your wife, in your bank account, in your country, in anything else beside God. They all are fallible soldiers. This is explained in the second canon right at the beginning. It says, Shukadeva is answering Pariksit's question, what should one do? What should think about? How should he direct his energy at the time of death? He had 7 days to live. What would we do with 7 days? You know, people is, you know, they say, oh, I'll run off to Hawaii, you know. What would we do? Chant Hare Krishna. As much as possible, right? Study the Shastra, 100% service. Because you know. So, but first he says, what do the non-devotees do? Well, you know, they're misspending their lives. Nidriya hriyate naktam vibhayat bhavaya divacharte rajan kutubam baraneva. This is how they spend their lives. At night, sleeping or at sex. During the day, making money. Weekend, shopping. I heard Prabhupada say that word. He used, and that's what it said. Kutumba badaneva. Kutumba means the family. You take the family, shopping, you know, enjoying, spend the money that you earn during the week. It's right there in the Bhagavatam. Diva chartehya raja. Diva means during the day, making money. Kutumba badaneva, for the purpose of maintaining the kutumba, the immediate family, extended family like that. And in the process of doing that, what do you have faith in? How do you, you know, get some kind of protection from the attack of this world? Deha patya kalatradi shatma sainyeshu satvapi. Sainyeshu means soldiers, an army. You have an army, it begins with the body, deha. Apatya, the children. Kalatra, the wife. Deha patya kalatra adishu. Adishu means all the expansions that come from that. The in-laws, you know, and you develop a bank account and you develop the insurance policies and the estate and this and that and all of these things, and they protect you. Don't forget the insurance, you know, the health insurance, life insurance, car insurance, fire insurance, you know. So what is the insurance policy? The whole insurance industry, multi-billion, I'm sure it's in the trillions, based on fear. It's all based on fear. Right? Something will happen. They try to scare you. You know, the ads. You see the ads sometimes in magazines. There's your lovely, you know, lovely little girl, you know, and there's the father. You know, what if you die tomorrow? Who will protect her? Oh, okay. The insurance policy will be there with my... Right? Fire. There's the house burning down. Family standing on the outside. Oh, they didn't buy the insurance. Let's see what happened. They try to scare you. Right? Life based on fear. So, but here, Shukadeva says in one verse, these are atmasanyeshu asatsu. Their asatsu means fallible. They can't really protect you. But even though people see that, tesham pramatta, because they're completely mad, intoxicated with material life, nidanam pashyan, they see that all these so-called soldiers are destroyed themselves. Wife can't save you. You know, they can save you. Your bank balance, what happened? This is with the financial crisis. Can't save. They see, but they don't see. Pashyan api na pashyati. This is like a phrase that just characterizes the whole world. Speaking in terms of knowledge. Knowledge gives you the ability to see the truth. So without that real knowledge, even though they see what's really going on, they don't see. And they continue to act on this basis, this you know, mistake. So what's the conclusion? So the conclusion, therefore, is that tasmad bharata sarvatma bhagavan ishvaro hari shrotava kirtitabhyasta smarta chakche ichitabhayam. Ichitabhayam. If you desire fearlessness at that time of death, which you cannot have, if you're still looking for help or, you know, safety to all of these external things. If you really desire fearlessness, then here's the program. He addresses Pariksit as Bharata, means the great descendant of King Bharata. You have to constantly hear about and chant about and remember the Supreme Lord. who is given four different designations in this verse. Sarvatma, the soul of all, the spirit, the super soul. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full in six opulences. Ishvara, the supreme control, and Hari. Hari, who takes away everything. You know? So, hear about, chant about, and remember him. Always. And then the result, the success will be the next verse, very famous verse. Etavan Sankhyogyavam Swadharma Parinishtaya Janmalabak Purapungsan Ante Narayana Smriti. If you can't remember the whole verse, at least remember the last line. Famous phrase. We can learn it tonight. There's only three of us. Ante.
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 Narayana.
Narayana.
Smritihi.
Smritihi.
Remember Narayan at the end. The end means death. That's the, here he says, whatever you do in terms of yoga, we'll go over it. We'll get this. Whatever you do in terms of etavan sankhya, the analytical process, yoga, meditation, swadharma, your activity as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Parinishtaya, nicely situated activity. Janmalabha, you will the attainment of your birth, the success of your birth, Parak, supreme, or, for any human being, Parak Pungsam, is to remember Narayan at the end of life. So if what you're doing is not helping you to come to that point, then you're risking having a failed birth. You know, if you want to have a successful birth, you know, no matter who you are, what you're doing, you have to have a program by which you're increasing your remembrance of Narayan or Krishna so that at that critical moment, you remember him, and then you're successful. Forget about, you know, the wealth or this or that, the children. That's not going to help you. It's your bhakti yoga, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, Bhagavan Ishvara Hari, that's previous verse. So the whole thing, the program is there in like five or six verses in the second canon. So, but the doubting soul, who can't take the process up, doesn't believe it, he has to place his faith somewhere, in the wife, in the insurance policy, in the San Diego Chargers, in this politician, that politician. Even though they're constantly being cheated, still, maybe this time, you know, this is... So the whole idea of the preaching arm of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, you know, and it's a preaching movement, is to instill faith in others in these books, in this process, and in the personalities who are stand behind every word of them. Every single word is, it comes from Krishna. It's all coming back to the personality of Krishna and his representatives. So there's two forces, faith and doubt. And we're trying to increase faith in ourselves and in others. And that's the whole program. Any questions on that? We can finish this chapter tonight. Text 41. Yoga sannyasta karmanam. Jnana sanchinna sanshayam. Atmavantam na karmani. Nibadnanti dananjaya. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his actions, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. Thus he is not bound by the reactions of work, O conqueror of riches. Report. One who follows the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, as it is imparted by the Lord, the personality of God in himself, becomes free from all doubts by the grace of transcendental knowledge. He, as a part and parcel of the Lord, in full Krishna consciousness, is already established in self-knowledge. As such, he is undoubtedly above bondage to action. Now, let's read the last purport. And then Monday we'll have a review. Tasmad agyana sambhutam.
Tasmad agyana sambhutam.
Ritstam gana sinatmanaha.
Ritstam jana sinatmanaha.
Chitvainam sankshayam yogam. Atishtotishtabharata. Therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. Purport. The yoga system instructed in this chapter is called Sanatana Yoga, or eternal activities performed by the living entity. This yoga has two divisions of sacrificial actions. One is called sacrifice of one's material possessions, and the other is called knowledge of self, which is pure spiritual activity. If sacrifice of one's material possessions is not dovetailed for spiritual realization, then such sacrifice becomes material. But one who performs such sacrifices with a spiritual objective or in devotional service makes a perfect sacrifice. When we come to spiritual activities, we find that these are also divided into two, namely understanding of one's own self or one's constitutional position, and the truth regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who follows the path of the Bhagavad Gita, as it is, can very easily understand these two important divisions of spiritual knowledge. For him, there is no difficulty in obtaining perfect knowledge of the self as part and parcel of the Lord. And such understanding is beneficial, for such a person can easily understand the transcendental activities of the Lord. In the beginning of this chapter, the transcendental activities of the Lord were discussed by the Supreme Lord himself. One who does not understand the instructions of the Gita is faithless and is to be considered to be misusing the fragmental independence awarded to him by the Lord. In spite of such instructions, one who does not understand the real nature of the Lord as the eternal, blissful, all-knowing personality of Godhead is certainly fool number one. Ignorance can be removed by gradual acceptance of the principles of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is awakened by different types of sacrifices to the demigods, sacrifice to Brahman, sacrifice in celibacy, in household life, in controlling the senses, in practicing mystic yoga, in penance, in forgoing material possessions, in studying the Vedas, and in partaking of the social institution called Varnashram Dharma. All of these are known as sacrifice, and all of them are based on regulated action. But within all these activities, the important factor is self-realization. One who seeks that objective is the real student of the Bhagavad Gita. But one who doubts the authority of Krishna falls back. One is therefore advised to study the Bhagavad Gita or any other scripture under a bona fide spiritual master with service and surrender. A bona fide spiritual master is in the disciplic succession from time eternal. And he does not deviate at all from the instructions of the Supreme Lord as they were imparted millions of years ago to the sun god, from whom the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita have come down to the earthly kingdom. One should therefore follow the path of the Bhagavad Gita as it is expressed in the Gita itself and be wary of self-interested people after personal aggrandizement who deviate others from the actual path. The Lord is definitely the Supreme Person, and his activities are transcendental. One who understands this is a liberated person from the very beginning of his study of the Bhagavad Gita. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the fourth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of transcendental knowledge. So here is an injunction. Krishna is saying, get up. And you now here the knowledge is compared to a sword. We've had the knowledge compared to a boat, to fire, and now to a sword, which you can destroy the doubts in the heart. Jnana sambhutam, which are born of ignorance. Chitvainam, this is an injunction. You know, cut it. Cut these sankshaya doubts to pieces and be in yoga. Get up. Stand up and fight, O Bharata. So for Arjuna, the result of actually understanding knowledge will be to take up the activity of fighting. Because the understanding is, oh, I am simply a servant of Krishna. He wants me to fight. Therefore, despite all of my personal misgivings about it, he still has to do it. That's the result of real knowledge. So Prabhupada is recapping here the idea of sacrifices. Sacrifice is a universal principle. You can't really do anything without sacrifice, just as you can't really succeed without tapasya, without some kind of austerity. They go together, austerity and sacrifice, really. But the key element is, what is the goal of that sacrifice? People are sacrificing like crazy to support their family, get elected, you know, build up a business, so many things, get name and fame in sports, whatever it may be, you know. But that sacrifice is just keeping you more entangled. You're not sacrificing the mode of passion or ignorance. So sacrificing the mode of goodness is one in which one is doing it selflessly, and in pure goodness is for Krishna. Remember, previous chapter we had yagyartart kamano niyata loko yam karma bandhana. Any activity not performed for Jagya, which in this context means Vishnu, binds one to this world. But if you're constantly sacrificing your own interests, your so-called own interests, for Krishna's interest, then you're really serving your own self-interest. And that's why it's mentioned here that understanding of one's own self and the truth regarding the Lord such a person. Anyway, the idea is that you're really situated in self-understanding. This is another part of knowledge. You know, the simple fact is that we, as particles of spirit, we're part and parcel of Krishna. That means just as the hand benefits when it serves the stomach, you know, by putting food in the mouth. Similarly, we will benefit by serving Krishna. We as spirit souls will benefit. It's just like watering the root of the tree. So to serve our real self, we should serve Krishna. If we serve our non-self by serving the body or the senses or even the mind, then ultimately we'll be cheated. Because they'll never be satisfied. And they can never reciprocate like Krishna can. Right? So it makes sense logically. The problem is that we're so habituated to serving this non-self and getting some little shadow reciprocation that we have doubts. We have doubts that we can really be happy by serving the Supreme Self. Those doubts have to be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Krishna says, and then get up and fight. So we have to get up and fight the good fight. It means to fight against the urges of the senses, the mind, you know, the anger, tongue, belly, and genitals. That's a battle, because there are, you know, enemies right now. So by fighting them and dovetailing them, you know, by it's kind of a jujitsu, right? Someone is, you know, really passionate, has a lot of energy. Okay, you know, work for Krishna. Here, build this cart for the Rath Yatra. How many devotees became devotees by working on the Rath Yatra, getting caught up in the day and night, the excitement of some festival or other? Well, you're using your senses, your hands, your eyes, everything. But it's not for you. It's for Jagannath, you know? And you experience directly some kind of bliss, you know? And it's not the bliss of sense gratification. It's the bliss of serving the Lord. So lo and behold, you have a direct experience. Now your faith can be founded on experience, you see. You know? And so you know, that knowledge, you know, knowledge which is supported by direct experience, that acts as a sword to cut apart these doubts. You know, like we were, even just our little experience in Krishna consciousness, you know, it's certainly something going on. It's not just some, you know, some imagination. Right? There's something substantial there in this chanting and the experience in Krishna, and backing that, you know, little tiny delicate little knowledge of ours up. If we read about it, we hear about the deep experiences of great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, and all the others. And we see, oh, there's a whole community. There's a whole, many, many devotees, large and small, who have experienced these things. It's real. It's just, you have to go through the process in order to experience it directly. So that's faith, you know. Agyana sambhutam. Slash the weapon of the demons of doubt, cut them to pieces, which are born of ignorance. Agyana on this side and jnana on this side. So by cultivating the knowledge and acting on the knowledge and deepening the knowledge, the doubts get thrown away. And when the doubts are thrown away, then you can be confident in your activities in Krishna consciousness. That's the idea. All right, we will go on. Oops, late. Okay. We'll have a review on Monday. All glories to the Father.